You know, my goal, my legacy to Power Home isn't me making $50 million or $500 million. I can't spend either of that, Dave. I came from nothing. I'm not going to blow through $50 million or $500 million, so it's irrelevant. What is relevant is how many lives in Power Home I can change. Not only customers, but employees. Can I get us to a point where we go public or we bring on a partner where we can have a lucrative transaction to get the employees some gain share or stock options to change their life? To me, that's a legacy. So I tell our employees, look, this is our company. You are building something for you. There's going to be a day that you're able to cash in some chips. You know, Google did it. Microsoft did it. Why can't we do it? And they believe in that. And they believe in me and they believe in our brand. And so it empowers them to make decisions like they're an entrepreneur.
Welcome to the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rotherow, where we get inside the minds of today's leading viral marketers as they reveal the exact strategies they use to build brands, products, and campaigns that are magnetic to customers, spread like wildfire, and seize the attention of millions. This is Viral by Design.
So welcome to another episode of Viral by Design. I'm extremely excited today to join my guest, Jason Waller. From the trailer park to childhood abuse to high school dropout with no college education and being a teenage dad to becoming the CEO of a billion-dollar company in the solar industry. My guest today is here to share how he built an Inc. 500 company with over 1,200 employees plus two other businesses completely from scratch on hard work, passion, sacrifice, and being a diligent student of his failures. So Jason, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Hey, thanks, Dave. That was a great intro too. Appreciate that. I'm super excited.
Absolutely, man. Well deserved. So first things first, you refer to yourself as the underdog. So I'd love for you to kind of dig down into that and what kind of characterizes that for you.
Well, I mean, I grew up in a little less than middle class. I wouldn't say it was poverty, but it was, you know, my parents worked two or three jobs at one time. I was going to school and helping my dad deliver papers. He filed bankruptcy multiple times. You know, there was some abuse there. And, you know, we moved around. I went to like eight schools before the fifth grade. So just a lot of that transitioning. And, you know, then we moved to North Carolina, moved to a trailer park. And when I started to go to high school in North Carolina, I didn't know what a trailer park was. I was labeled and judged and disliked because of my financial status that I couldn't control as a freshman or a sophomore in high school. You know, I would get made fun of because I bought fake Tommy Hilfiger. We all remember what Tommy Hilfiger used to be. And it's in again now, but it was really in back in the mid-90s. And I would go to a flea market and buy fake Tommy Hilfiger because that's all we could afford. And I would get made fun of at school. I get made fun of because the car I bought that was, you know, me and you going out to dinner cost more than my first car. So lots of different things that I had to overcome. And then really, you know, I met my wife. We've been together over 20 years now, married. This will be our 20th anniversary, but we've been together dating 24 years. And, you know, we met in high school and her family judged me. You know, oh, he lives in a trailer. He can stick his feet out the window. He'll never amount to nothing. Why do you want to be with someone like that? So I had all these stigma things in my way that I just, you know, I had to get tough. I had to find a way to, you know, to fight back and to be different and to, you know, prove that I am worth more and that I can do big things. And it kind of just gave me drive and hunger to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, so many people just wouldn't make it out of that kind of situation, right? They just stay, especially with that kind of program, as you said, about your girlfriends, families, judgments, constantly being told that kind of thing. And, you know, what you went through as a child, it's like deeply programming beliefs into yourself, right? So what was the process you went through to overcome that? And to, I guess you had to install new beliefs about yourself, right?
Yeah, I had to have some wins, right? I had to find a way to start feeling better about myself. You know, I felt I could do things. I used what they would say or what people at school would say. I mean, I got kicked out of school. I didn't finish traditional high school, never went to college. We had a kid really early. I was 18. My wife was 17. And so the world was thrown at me. I had to, you know, figure out what am I going to do? It was, you know, shit or get off the pot. And that's what I did. I said, I got to change my life. And so I wanted to prove myself that not only I can provide for my daughter and provide for, you know, then she was my girlfriend, but that I could take things to the next level and never have people judge me again. I had this the sick drive, that the more shit that people said, the hunger that just grew inside me to gain more. And I'm glad to say now, for the last 15, 20, you know, probably 17 years, every time her family wants anything, I buy it. Every time we go to dinner, I pull out the Black Amex, I pay for it. When they want to travel to see us, I put them in first class, because that's what it's about, right? You turn those haters into fans, where now you have to do things for them and they have to feel uncomfortable or get comfortable feeling uncomfortable. I don't feel anything different. I'm the same guy with the same drive that, you know, back then as I am now. I just more successful, but you know, they have to deal with those demons and they're good people. But my point is I had this initiative of, I want to be able to buy the meals and I got this and fly them around to where, look what little old me, you know, from the trailer park, didn't finish school, was able to do. So just to be able to have that mindset really changed things. And, you know, there's been many times that I've struggled in other things in life, you know, and, you know, working at corporate America and feeling like I deserve more. And I was a top salesperson every company I was at, but I felt handcuffed. I wouldn't get promoted because of my age I didn't have an education. And so I eventually had to, you know, take control of my own life and build my own business, which was also hard, but I had to have that mindset to get through that as well.
100%, man. It's massively inspirational. And it must taste so sweet being able to whip out the Black Amex now and do that kind of thing. That's awesome. So what was that process like then? Obviously, you know, you when you reach that kind of rock bottom point, you're like, right, someone's got to change. You got to do something. You got all this drive. Where did you start? Because that's often the most difficult bit, right?
You got to start. I always say life's not an elevator. It's one step at a time. And you got to get small wins. So you start with one thing. What can I change right now? How do I set a 30-day goal to see a difference? How do I set a 60-day goal to see a difference? How about a 90-day goal? How about a 180-day goal? You know, if you set small goals and you get some small wins, you feel confident again. You start building some confidence. You start building some strength. If you set long-term big goals that are unattainable in the next 2, 3, 6 months, you're going to get discouraged. You're going to feel like a failure. You might quit. Most do. So I try to look at things like stairs, like steps, right? Or I say, you can't feed an elephant, but one bite at a time. You're not going to go here and they eat the whole thing. It takes time. And so as long as I get a 1% better tomorrow than I did today and 1% better the next day than I do tomorrow, I'm gaining some ground here, but I need to look at that as a small win. And if I put myself in the moment and not the future, I won't get discouraged. So you really have to set your mindset of how to get those small wins. And, you know, for me, it was like, all right, I've got to get a better job, get us a place, right? Got a baby on the way. All right. So I take a sales job. I'm making money I probably shouldn't have made, you know, unless I had a college education. But I, you know, in sales, you can set your own income potential because there's commissions. So I was doing really well and I can get us an apartment. It was like, I want to get a nicer car. My car can't even put a car seat in the back. It's a hatchback, you know, car. So I had to continue just small goals, set goals. And I stayed with that process. You know, when you don't have a lot and, you know, and nothing against those that are given everything, but I'm a lot tougher than they are because I've had to build everything and I know what it's like to not have anything. And I've had a road to get here. And so I've got to taste every little win on the way up and it becomes more addicting. Oh, I got to win. I need another one. You know, it's like, I can't explain it. It's like, if you're walking in the desert, and you get a little bit of water, you're like, I need more water. And you keep walking in the desert. You just keep drinking from that. That's kind of the addictive personality that I have, that as I get those little wins, I need more to get to where I'm going. I think the process is really short-term goals and small wins. What can you control right now? What can you control this week, this month, the next 2 months, the next 6 months, and that's it. Don't look past that. If you always focus on that, you're in the moment, you'll get to where you're going.
100%, man. And I'm really behind that concept of celebrating wins every day as well. Like, that's something that people have been telling to me for years. I've never really given much, taken too seriously until recently. But especially when you're in those times where, you know, the world seems to be falling down around you and like things aren't going right, actually actively rooting out what's going good and actually celebrating it and allowing yourself to like congratulate yourself is huge, right? It just creates this massive forward perpetual motion.
Well, it's huge to do that, but don't do it too long. I treat every day like a playoff game, Dave. If we break a record today, great. All right, that's a win. What are we doing tomorrow, right? You can't stay in that moment because the moment you do, all that momentum goes backwards. So yes, I do celebrate, but all my peers and all my friends and the people that work for me, they know I celebrate just for like 15 seconds. And then we're on to the next thing. Internally, when I'm sleeping, when I'm going to bed, I can smile ear to ear and go, that was a win today. That was good. But you got to treat every day also like a playoff game, because what happens is sometimes you'll get up those stairs, you'll get some of those goals, and then some people settle. They're like, this is good enough. And I just don't want to settle. I have a term, AGB, always getting better. That's always ringing in my head. How do I get better? How does my company get better? How do we get better? We're never perfect. If you're perfect, you're wrong. You're not there. You always have to work on things, and you always have to try to push yourself, because once you settle, that's it. That's what you got. You've hit your peak. And so I'm nervous to ever hit that. So I'm always pushing.
Yeah, got it. So did you always have solar in your sights? Was that like a long-term goal, or is that just something you moved into?
Not at all. I mean, I used to sell cell phones back before everybody had them. I worked for a company called Bell Atlantic. Then it was Verizon Wireless back in early, 01 to 04 timeframe. And, before that I worked at the bank, call centers, selling checking accounts online. And I did really well at that. That a job I got with a fake resume. I don't advise doing that, but I was a hustler. How can I get in here and work? I could sell, I pretended I had a college degree, got the job. And then when they found out I didn't have a college degree, they kept me because I was so good at it. So, I did whatever I had to do to get out there and get the experience. And, when I did cell phones, it was weird because it was about 30% penetrated. And I would try to sell BlackBerry PDAs, and text messaging just started. And I would sit with these corporations and say, hey, look, this is the future. You're not going to be using that landline or fax machine anymore. You're going to be using these devices. They're like, no, we're not. I'm like, yeah. And that's what they were telling us at Bell Atlantic / Verizon. So I believed it, and it was the future. And so after that, I got into home security business, selling like alarm systems, like someone breaks in, your alarm goes off, or someone fall down, they can't get up, they hit the emergency button, or a smoke detector goes off. That's what I built up. And, I was building door knocking teams, van teams. I was teaching people how to knock on doors and sell alarm systems, and, how to telemarket on the phone and sell alarm systems. And I loved it. And I did that from 05 to 2014. And about 2012, I saw solar growing in California and New York. And in the United States, things usually start in New York and California, work their way through. And I was in North Carolina at the time, so it's a few years behind of what's in. And I remember I felt like home security was stagnant. It was flatlining, and I don't like flatline. I like mountains. Like, I like it to go up. I like rocket ships. And I wanted to get into the solar business in 13, but instead I partnered with another security company to take it to the next level. And we did. And then we sold it. And then I got into the solar business from the ground up. And I thought it was cool. What I liked about it reminded me of the cell phone business. And not everybody had it, but it's the future. It made sense. It's clean. It's green. It saves money. It allows people to control their power. You can get batteries where they're not powerless. When the utility companies have all these rolling blackouts or grid issues, now you can keep your power on. And I knew electric cars were becoming a thing. Tesla was just coming out. All these things led to and reminded me of my experience at the cell phone business back in 01, 02, 03. An 04, where it was like, not everyone has cell phones. This is cool. That's what solar reminded me of. So I got excited. When you're part of an industry, it's just growing. It's got a lot of white space. It's not penetrated. It's exciting to be at the forefront of that growth. So I opened the solar company, and the first 2 years I struggled. I didn't make money. I didn't get a paycheck. All the money I made from home security, I put back in it. I had to sell I had a $2 million house on the lake. I had to sell it, tell my wife and four kids, guys, unfortunately, we're moving off the lake. I need the money to grow the business. And we downsized to a house that was like 1/8 the size. My family was upset. I was upset. You feel like I just got knocked down. I'm a big Rocky fan. The Russian just knocked my ass down. What am I going to do? And I had to grind, and I had to figure it out. And I had to wear 12 hats at work, and I had to build it from the ground up and terminate anybody that wasn't believing what I was believing and that wasn't hungry and didn't have a mission and didn't think like I thought. And then it finally turned around. The end of 16, I finally started getting a paycheck. I opened up January 15, I started getting paid. 17, we started, making money, and then 18 and then 19. And, we finished 2020 with 1,700 employees and $370 million in sales. we'll do the $750 million in sales this year. Company's worth about $1 billion, give or take. I mean, we are really building a movement, but it started with nothing and went backwards and then became something.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge, man. Massive, massive congratulations to you. It's such an incredible story. One thing that you touched on there, which I know you're a big advocate of, is creating that culture in the workplace. And this is something I'm a huge fan of, particularly in my business now. You know, I've really started to take this into account the last year or so. Creating that culture and creating an environment that people want to work hard and want to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. Can you go a bit deeper on that?
Yeah, I think the tips there are is empower your team to feel like owners, right? And make them be a part of something, not an employee. You know, my goal, my legacy to Power Home isn't me making $50 million or $500 million. I can't spend either of that, Dave. I came from nothing. I'm not going to blow through $50 million or $500 million, so it's irrelevant. What is relevant is how many lives in Power Home I can change. Not only customers, but employees. Can I get us to a point where we go public or we bring on a partner where we can have a lucrative transaction to get the employees some gain share or stock options to change their life? To me, that's a legacy. So I tell our employees, look, this is our company. You are building something for you. There's going to be a day that you're able to cash in some chips. You know, Google did it. Microsoft did it. Why can't we do it? And they believe in that. And they believe in me and they believe in our brand. And so it empowers them to make decisions like they're an entrepreneur. I allow them to run their part of the business as their own, you know, and I'm a big believer. I love football, you know, like the NFL. And if they can't, you know, I give them the playbook. They run all the plays they want to, all the directors, all of the leadership team. And if they're not putting up points, then I'm going to get involved. But other than that, I want them to have the plays to put up points. If they can't, then I'll get involved and implement the offense I want. And in most cases, they get it and they put something together that makes sense. And now that we're all rowing for the same thing, it's not just a job to most of them. This is a career. This is a lifestyle. This is something that's going to be bigger than what they imagined. And so now we're all in the same mindset and we're rowing and the culture is great like that. And we give back to our employees. This holiday party, the virtual party we did, we gave out $208,000 to our employees. We sat there live and we're pulling winners, $25,000 here, $10,000 here, $5,000 here, random lottery winners. We had 1,450 people online out of our 1,700 employees live on the holiday party where we were just giving out money to the employees. So we give back and they love that.
That's incredible, man. I think that's one of the big advantages that smaller new companies, not that, you know, 1,700 employees is small by any means, but as opposed to like these big behemoth like companies that people want to work for, like Amazon, et cetera, the big thing that I think smaller organizations have against those people is the ability to harbor a culture like that, right? And be able to put staff and team members in charge of something and make them feel like that, you know, they've got enough in the game that they want to drive it forward, right?
Well, being an entrepreneur, you need to make sure that you get a team around you that can help scale and grow. And people, I didn't know what EBITDA was 2.5 years ago, Dave. I didn't know. I built two companies and never understood EBITDA. I didn't finish school. So when we got to a point, it's like EBITDA is important. I'm like, oh, okay. I had to bring on somebody that was smarter than me at that. I had to bring on a president that could build a corporate, you know, structure and barrier of HR department, an accounting team, a CFO. I had to bring on all these big things. Well, then we continue. Then we brought on a chief sales officer, then, you know, a chief marketing officer. We're adding all these layers of the business. We're creating middle and higher level management positions. And, you know, as we continue to scale and grow, those larger companies, some of them, you know, have already been existent. So it's just corporate. There is no structure. So you're right. There's no culture that is exciting. But our goal is, you know, when we had 100 employees and now we have 1,700, we feel like the culture is continuing to grow and be better each time. So when we're at 5,000 employees, we think we'll still have the same culture or better, or 10,000, as long as the same mindset at the top is at the bottom. We can keep that when we grow. When we get away from that, that's when it starts to change.
100%. Somebody listening right now had a business and they've not really considered culture. They're not really considered any of the stuff we're talking about right now. What would be a good first step for them to start implementing this kind of stuff in their business?
I think the first thing is, you know, build a business. First of all, find what your passion and your why is. What are you doing? Are you just trying to do something that, you know, to occupy time? Are you doing something you love? Are you trying to scale and build wealth and help people along the way? What is the goals? And then you can set those initiatives, you know, short-term and mid-term goals of getting there. But I think everything's about branding. Everything's about building, you know, your brand and making it marketable to people. And then, you know, if you're going to scale, you got to get people. You got to learn to trust people. You know, that was hard for me early on, but I trust people now. As long as I empower them and I can still, you know, make decisions that I need to, I got to trust people to grow. You know, if you hover over, they won't grow. You got to move so the sun can hit them and they can grow too. And, you know, in order to scale a business and grow it, you know, from the ground up, you've got to create process. You've got to master it. And then you've got to be able to say, I can scale this. I'm going to teach this person to do it so I can do it again. Then I'm going to teach this person to do it. So now I got two people do it. And I can do this. And then it just multiplies. And then all of a sudden you're building that up. And, you know, I think growing within is important. I think hiring people from the outside is not very healthy all the time. You know, all of our sales leaders, we have on the sales side of our business, we probably have 350 people. And on the production side, 350 people. The rest of the people are all the middle part, you know, the back end. But that production side and that sales side, everybody started at the bottom and moved up. And we've got directors, regionals, regional directors, project managers, district managers, assistant district managers. Every one of them moved up. They all started from the bottom. And we got big enough to where we had to create a new job and everybody moves up. And when we do that, we realize two things. One, the culture is great, but two, a lot of these people aren't great at being managers. They don't have that experience. It's like, you're a great sales rep. We're going to make you a manager. Oh shit, you're not that good. So we created a training and development team, now that we're large enough, that goes in and they even work with me. I got a CEO coach. I try to get better. Our executive team tries to get better. Our directors try to get better. There's modules, there's training to make each one. How do I do KPIs? How do I measure my sales staff? You got to work with them. But if you have someone who believes in your culture and believes in your product and earns the respect of doing the job, then you can teach them to be a manager, promote them and work with them to be a manager. You know, you got to get to there if they want to be. Not everybody wants to be. Some people want to be scoring points. Some people want to coach the people scoring points. It's all about what they want, but you got to put them in the position to succeed and you got to give them the ability to succeed by getting the resources there. And the only way you get to that point is scaling by duplicating yourself. How do I get this person to do what I'm doing? How do I get this person to do what we are doing? How do I get these people to do what we are doing? And then you just keep piling on.
And is that process facilitated by the guys that you brought on? Like when you said you had to bring on like a CFO and all those people and understand EBITDA, like was that, did those people kind of facilitate that for you? Or how do you like, how do you filter that down and how do you maintain the culture throughout that as well?
Well, they had to, first of all, I pick who came on the team. So I need to make sure that they have a why and they're passionate about what we're doing. It's not just a stepping stone or a job. And secondly, directors report to them. So at a high level spot, you're not going to grow within. You know, our executive team, they came from outside or were founders. You know, our accounting team, they need a certain education. They're hired from the outside. Our HR team, same thing. The rest of the company, we grow within. And we do that for culture reasons. It keeps that culture. You know, we're looking at a director of operations or director of production. He started as an installer 4 years ago. He can elaborate and have conversations with everybody between him and that installer. He understands all the positions. He's been there. It's the same thing in sales. A director who started as a field energy consultant, he's been an APM, a PM, a district manager, regional. He's been all those. He understands each position. So that allows a lot of credibility there, and it allows a lot of excitement for people that come into the company to see real life growth stories. You know, when you go to corporate America, you're like, what are my options? I mean, I can make money, but maybe my goal is to be a bigger part of a business. And I don't know where my growth up, where's the map here for me to get there? We show them the map and we show them real success stories, real live people that have moved where you are. And here they are. You have this shot to be here. They did it 2 years. You could do it one. And so they buy into that. And when we bring the high level, the CFO and the president, you know, make no mind, we're the Avengers, right? It's important. Superman can't win alone. He can't. But if you bring the Avengers together, right? And if I'm pulling Captain America and I got all these other superheroes that have different powers than me, now we can really succeed. but there's still got to be one decision maker. There's still got to be one face. So I hold the executives accountable and they hold the directors accountable. Therefore, it is one mission and it is one culture and it's one belief. I don't allow us to be equal, like, oh, you do what you want. No. It starts with me and works its way down. And that's how I keep that control.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you know, speaking of you having the basically the front seat of a $1 billion company, I'm really interested to understand how you manage your focus, your energy levels, like what your kind of work patterns are like. Are you working like 14, 16, 18 hours a day? Or have you mastered things down into a better schedule now?
Well, it rotates. So, you know, there were times I was working 16, 18 hour days when we first were building the business. Then it would go to 10 or 12 hour days. Then I moved to Michigan and took more of a higher level of vision, negotiating with NFL teams, becoming the face, doing our commercials. Then my work, you know, my grind work was 8 to 10 hours, but then I'd have 2 or 3 hours of other stuff like doing TV commercials or radio ads or interviewing people or building relationships. So the energy and the job changes, it evolves. And then now I've got this podcast thing that has exploded. And I didn't think it would. I started as a hobby. I won an Entrepreneur of the Year award, an EY Entrepreneur of the Year award back in 19. And they said, you gotta write a book. I said, man, I ain't even read a book. They're like, well, you gotta do something. You gotta, you know, do a podcast. You gotta share your story. You gotta share some of your success and some of the things you overcame to help people out. And so I was feeling a little guilty. Yeah, I probably should do something. So I started this podcast, and when it exploded, now that takes some time, but the podcast helps build the Power Home brand. They all tie within. So the True Underdog podcast and the Power Home brand are all the same, right? You got my face at each, building the value of each up, but also the connection to each up. And it's like a spider web. And so I get, you know, I probably dedicate 45 hours, 50 hours a week to Power Home and 5 to 10 to True Underdog podcast and my book stuff I've got going. But that's just, you know, to keep my composure, I drink a lot of energy drinks, right? Yeah. And I work out every morning. I do cryo and I try to make the afternoons, late afternoons. You know, I try to do dinner with my kids once or twice a week and, you know, make it family time. Not everybody ordering DoorDash, but hey, we're all coming down and doing this together. And then I watch shows and hang out, you know, watching TV in the bedroom, spend time with the wife that way so we can reconnect for the day and reset my brain. You know, it's important that you do that. And I try never to work on Sundays. And I try to work very, very, very little on Saturdays.
Yeah. I love that you do cryo, man. I'm very much into that. I'm very much into biohacking. And are you doing the actual cryo chambers?
Yes, and I love it. I do like 4 times a week. I love it.
Yeah, so I used to have a cold plunge down at the place that I lived in Spain. And that was just incredible, you know, the full immersion. But I just do a minute, 60 seconds at the end of the shower, which is getting pretty cold here in England right now. So the water's pretty cold.
I do a 3-minute chamber. I get in there for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's cold.
Yeah, right, yeah. And because it's slightly different with the chamber, right? Because you're not actually in contact with any water, so... Is that right that it doesn't feel as cold, but it still has the same effect?
I don't know if it doesn't feel as cold. It's cold. -270, right. But it feels like an ice bath. And, you know, I got turned on to it from a couple of the Detroit Lions players, a couple of the NFL players said, like, man, you got to go try this out. So I don't like cardio. Like, I don't go to the gym and run. I don't, like, that's just not my deal. But when you do cryo, you burn like 500, 800 calories in the 3 minutes. And then it helps with your immune system and it helps with your focus and it helps with depression. It does so many benefits. So when I go in there, my endorphins are skyrocketing. I feel great after, but it is miserable 3 minutes. I'm dancing and I'm, yeah, I got this. Yeah. You know, you're doing one of those, but it is tough. But it's similar to the ice bath, but you're stuck in there and the gases are going in and you got to wear socks and gloves and boxers, but you're like, you're freezing and it goes down to the bones.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. That's really cool, man. I'm going to have to try out the proper cryo experience at some point myself. So obviously now we're living through some pretty fluctuating economic times, right? There's lots of opportunity. There's lots of stuff falling to pieces.
Yeah.
For people who are kind of starting out, if you could give those kind of people advice from looking back on your own career, like what opportunities they should be looking for, what principles they should be applying to decisions they make?
I think, you know, online businesses, food business, beauty business, you know, counseling type business, therapy, anything that you can do online and scale, I think people need to look at. And I think anything that you've ever wanted to do or thought about doing, if you had a life-changing event for the bad, or maybe it's not bad, it's just different in 2020, use 2021 to do what you want. Take a chance, because the worst thing you can do is not do something and then regret it. That's horrible. You know, if you even think you're going to regret not trying something, that means you need to try it, because the worst thing you can do is have regrets. I think try and fail's okay. You learn, but you got to try it. And I like online businesses because they're scalable. You can get influencers to help you out. You can promote it that way. You know, it in the world we live in, that's a little easier. And you know, people, you know, we evolve as people of how we get information. And as long as you stay ahead of that curve and you don't stay in the same thing all the time, I think that your business can grow.
I love that message. If you might as well try it. You know, it reminds me of that quote, but I think it's Jim Carrey quotes his dad as saying, you might just as well fail doing something that you don't want to do. So you might as well have a go at something you do want to do, right?
I agree. I mean, think about it. When we don't, if I wanted to try something and I didn't, I'm going to go through, you know, maybe it's a whole lifetime of regret. Maybe it's a week of regret. Maybe it's 5 weeks of regret, but I'm going to sit there and think about it. Like, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I do that? And to me, that's the worst feeling. That's worse than falling flat on my face, because at least I won't have regret. And I learned something. Like, oh, well, I can't do that. At least I learned something.
Yeah. Well, so what are you most excited about 2021 then? You got so much going on. Like, what's your focus right now? And what are you gearing up for?
Well, our company is getting ready to go to transaction mode. We're going to bring on a different financial partner than what we have now. We have a minority investor investment company now. They're going to get bought out. We're going to bring another partner on. Could be some big, we're talking to some big companies. So we're excited about that. We're excited about continuing to build a movement. That's our motto. Bam, one panel, one customer, one employee at a time. So we're following the same vision and the same mission. And, you know, we're going to duplicate, we're opening up other states. We may go a little bit into Canada coming up soon. So I'm excited about that. And then I got a book coming out. Like I said, I never read a book, but I'm writing a book. I got 4 chapters done. I don't physically write it because my grammar sucks, but I interview a ghostwriter and she writes it. She wrote David Coggins' book. And it was a New York Times bestseller. And he's a great motivational guy. We have a similar personality, she said. So she's writing my book. I think it'll do okay. If it doesn't, that's okay. As long as it helps one person, I don't care. Well, I do care because I want to win. So I want it to do great. I won't lie. But if it doesn't, then I'll learn why it didn't and I'll write a damn another one. But I believe it'll be fine. And then I've got the podcast exploding, which is really exciting. I mean, I was a top 5 entrepreneur podcast back-to-back months. Had some pretty cool guests on there. And I continue to build that up. And you know, it's exciting. I can help. I just started getting on the new thing, which is called Clubhouse. And yeah. So I've got a thing going on there Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern. That is, it's exciting. I talk about entrepreneurship. I've got a decent following there. That's an exciting platform to really build a business or build relationships and network. So I'm doing a lot of that, but I'm just excited to be out of 2020, dude, all the bullshit, the nonsense and the COVID. I hate China. I blame China. Be grateful Jason Waller wasn't president because China wouldn't be here. I've gone on record saying that 4 or 5 times. Like, this is ridiculous that we've all had to suffer, you, me, everybody, because of that nonsense, that they're bullshit. Like, it's ridiculous. And then the media, like, somebody needs to smack around the media a little bit, because all they've done is scare everybody, including these children. And this is ridiculous. I mean, yes, there's a problem, but it's not the end of the world. We need to relax. And, you know, so I'm just glad to get past that. And I'm excited about 2021.
You and me both, man. Like, it's definitely, as we were saying just briefly, I think before we got on the call, you know, it looks like we're turning around a massive corner and there's so much opportunity. And, you know, the advice that you shared today, I'm sure is going to help so many people listening. So thank you so much for sharing everything with us. Where can people go to find out more about yourself, follow you, et cetera?
Yeah, thank you. So you can go to trueunderdog.com. You can go to jasonwaller.com. True Underdog's the podcast. We're at iHeart, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. My Instagram is Jason Waller, bam, BAM. Facebook's Jason Waller. But definitely, you know, check it out, follow it. My company's Power Homes and you go to powerhome.com and check out the business. And then look, go on, you know, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. I don't know what time that would be there, but dude, check out Clubhouse. It's fun. You know, it's exciting. Check out my podcast. I've got guests on there where we talk about their issues. And then I've got Underbites, which I go through tips, whether it be anxiety, whether it be hardship, whether it be burnout. And I give about 30, 40 minutes of tips there every single time.
That's brilliant, man. We'll make sure that the all the links that you just mentioned are featured on the Viral Bodies Own website. Thank you again for joining us and for your wisdom, Jason. Very much appreciated.
Thank you, Dave. Be blessed and be safe, man. Bam.
Cheers, brother.
This has been the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rothero. For more viral marketing secrets and to get detailed cliff notes on all episodes, visit viralbydesign.net.